For all of us make many mistakes. In the name of God, amen. Pity the poor letter from James. It's our featured epistle for the entire month of September, and yet for most of Christian history, it has been relegated to a sort of second-class status. The early fathers of the church, people like Origen and Tertullian, were not even sure it belonged in the Bible. Martin Luther called it, quote, that epistle of straw. One of our former rectors here, Theodore Parker Ferris, was actually a fan. But preaching from this very pulpit on May 2nd, 1952, he offered his own analysis of why James has traditionally gotten such short shrift. It never reaches the heights, he said. And by that he meant that James never quite gets to the thrilling poetic eloquence of Paul. Ferris is right there. You yourself probably have favorite phrases of Paul's etched onto your very heart. There is Corinthians 13, offered for every good reason at about 75% of the weddings we attend. And now faith, hope, and love abide. These three, and the greatest of these is... There is Romans 8. For I am convinced that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor rulers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from God. When my own ashes are someday commended to God, I hope those words are still hanging in the air. Because Paul can make words soar, and he can make our hearts and our minds soar with them. And James never quite does that. Nor does James ever get to what Ferris understood as the, quote, depths of real religion. James makes several mentions of Jesus, but these seem somewhat obligatory and formulaic. What left Ferris a bit cold, and what we have heard today, and what we will hear in the next weeks, are long lists of behaviors. Do this, not that. Religion never begins with duty, but with devotion, concluded Ferris. And his deeper point was that we all mess up. For all of us make mistakes, says James himself to us this morning, as he considers the messes we all make with our tongues and our texts and our tweets. Peter himself is so disastrously loquacious in this morning's gospel. Did you catch that? So when we do mess up, what comes next? It has something to do with the changeless love of God, with the eternal promise of renewal, of new life out of death. That love and that eternity of second chances is to the Christian mind at the root of every good work we do, every kindness we extend. They are what save us when we are our own worst selves. But James never quite gets there. Do this, not that, he says. Be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to anger. Treat all with impartiality. Great advice, but thin gruel maybe when we are confronted with profound suffering, as we have all been in these past days, with cataclysmic violence, with our own mortality and the mortality of those we love. To paraphrase the late, great Dorothy Parker, way down deep, James is really pretty shallow. Maybe another reason James is on the second tier is that we don't really know who James was. And we really do not know to whom he is writing. Tradition says that he is the brother of Jesus, James of Jerusalem. Christians nervous about the Blessed Virgin having given birth to other children submit that James was not Mary's child, but Joseph's by a previous marriage. Scholars are divided. The answer has not been given to us. The world will never know. So let's continue this morning with what we do have. We have a letter from one James, written to those he understands as his brothers and sisters. His focus is almost exclusively on what they are doing together and for others. If you were with us last week, you heard him say that faith without works is dead. That is perhaps the bumper sticker quote from the entire epistle. What he is not saying at all is that faith is irrelevant or unimportant. What he is saying is that good works, care for the stranger, compassionate and temperate speech, visiting the sick, treating rich and poor alike, are what flow naturally out of the life of faith. Here is how you heard it just a few minutes ago. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and brackish water? Can a fig tree, my brothers and sisters, yield olives, or a grapevine figs? His implication, his unspoken understanding, is that God is the source. But James doesn't spend a great deal of time on theology. He is more like Men's Health or the Harvard Business Review. He is prescriptive and all about action. He is speaking to the church, and he is afraid that the church has absorbed the values, defaulted to the values of the wider culture, a culture of harsh and cruel speech, a culture where the sick have been made to feel invisible, a culture where the rich are fawned over and the poor are relegated to the margins. And to this church to whom he writes, which for practical purposes is our church this morning, James says this: you be different. You do differently. Now try any of this on your own, by yourself, as a single agent, and you will be dismissed as a romantic, an oddball, an eccentric. But together as church, we can actually be a collection of nonconformists, of dreamy and hopeful oddballs, and we together stand a chance of reforming the cruelty, of tempering the harshness, of bringing those on the margins to the very center of our lives, to the very center which is the heart of God, our only permanent home. Do this, not that. James is so very concrete. It's about our tongues this morning, our decisions and our actions. It's about what we say to one another and how we say it and what we charitably leave unspoken. The kingdom, he is telling us, does not get here any other way. For all of us make many mistakes, he tells us this morning. Those words are themselves a kind of interesting good news. For one thing, when we think about them in community, mistakes And community, this idea that we all make them is radically equalizing. This sensibility asks us to forgive each other, to extend the benefit of the doubt to each other. They remind me of our own parish covenant, drafted towards the end of 2012, when we as a parish were in a period of some disagreement and transition. Do you remember the covenant? When was the last time you had a look at it? Those of us who had a role in its drafting spent a good deal of time back then with a short book by Gilbert Rendell. It had the catchy title, Behavioral Covenants and Congregations, A Handbook for Honoring Differences. And here for you this morning are three of the many questions Rendell asked of any parish considering drafting a covenant. He wrote these, bear in mind, in 1999. Number one, where do you observe our communities or nation becoming less civil? Number two, where do you run into uncivil or confrontational behavior in your work, your community, or your neighborhood? And number three, do you think congregations have a role or responsibility to introduce manners, or obedience to the unenforceable? Obedience to the unenforceable. By that phrase, Rendell meant behaviors that were neither legal obligations nor purely based on self-interest. You know, things like kindness, compassion, encouragement, and forgiveness. These are what we are invited to do, the people we are invited to be, day after day, hour by hour, obedient to the unenforceable and to the unrewarded at times. The covenant we eventually generated was all about that. And we have put some copies at the doors this morning, here to my right and at the west front, in case you want to refresh yourselves on its guidance for communication, community life, conflict, obedience to the unenforceable. This is really, too, the thrust of the letter to James. And I think it's why, in this particular cultural moment, that this short epistle, you can read the whole thing in about 8 minutes, is just waiting to be clasped. For all of us make many mistakes, he tells us. We have said and will say the wrong thing at the wrong time. We will focus our attention for every wrong reason on the person who does not need us, and we will ignore the person who does. We have failed and will fail to be curious about the strangers among us, ignoring opportunities for growth and renewal. And we have it within ourselves, says James, to live in a new way.
Through Christ, let us continually offer to God